Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Hello, this is Stephen O'Doherty. The heightened tension between the United States and North Korea has generated heated comment from both sides, including the recent threat to make Darwin the target of a North Korean nuclear missile. Well, the world watches and waits to see how that plays out. What do we know about North Korea? The country has only very limited interactions with the West, so there's much we don't know. It's intriguing. The country's been ruled by a family dynasty for three generations. They're ruthless, as we know, in suppressing opposition, including from their own family members. How should we understand the current actions of that regime? Are they building their weapons for offensive or defensive reasons? Michael Pembroke says that to answer that question, we have to enter a non-Western mindset. Michael is a New South Wales Supreme Court judge and author who's completing a new book, Korea, America's First Failed War with China. To research his book, he travelled to North Korea and endeavoured to absorb the mindset of its people. Life in North Korea can be pretty bleak. That is, unless you're one of the elite, that group that shapes their responses to the West. You'll find them living in Pyongyang, a city which, a bit like Manhattan, has been given the nickname Pyongyatton. I began by asking Michael Pembroke, what's life like in the capital?
There are some really state-of-the-art buildings in Pyongyang. Modern apartment towers, science and technology museums, sports stadiums. There's a dolphinarium where, seawater is pumped from the West Sea on the Chinese coast for the dolphins, for the people of Pyongyang to watch. There are a surprising number of beautifully manicured gardens and playgrounds. In spring, it's a very pretty place. Of course, winters there are very severe, and it's harsh. It's a harsh climate in winter. But during our visit in spring last year, it was delightful. And on Sundays and public holidays, the gardens are full of people just promenading and walking and picnicking in these public places.
And these are the elite?
Yes. I say the elite because really only the elite live in Pyongyang.
Yes. You're painting a very different picture of life in North Korea than the one we imagine, but then you're painting a picture about a very tiny proportion of the population.
Well, the elite is probably larger than most people think. The country's population is about 25 million people, and the elite, who are so essential to the survival of the regime, represent a good million people, possibly more.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a very large component of the society.
And are these people who are effectively all in on the secret?
Well, what secret do you mean?
Well, the secret that the North Korea portrays the West as being this, you know, malodorous place that's about to attack them at any minute, which other than that, you know, their growing nuclear capacity, it would be the end of them. It's not true, though, is it?
Well, I've gone to some trouble to explain this in my book, which I hope will be released later this year, but I'm not the only one to point out that the North Koreans feel threatened, and it's perfectly understandable that they do feel threatened because they're still at war. On their southern border in South Korea, there are approximately 80 American bases and installations. They have a small number of nuclear warheads, and they're seeking to perfect their delivery systems. But they know, and the whole world knows, that the United States has approximately 7,000 nuclear warheads, and that at any one time, there are nuclear-armed submarines with nuclear warheads targeted at Pyongyang. And what the Pyongyang regime wants, above all, is to achieve regime survival and state security.
But in the middle of all of that, then, there is a big secret, isn't there? The secret is that the people outside of the elite, they are kept in the dark, literally. They have meagre resources. They are some of the poorest and most I think, desperate people on earth, aren't they?
I think that's overblown, but it's certainly they're not prosperous.
Miserable, perhaps, is the word I'm looking for.
Yes. No, they're not miserable. They're not miserable because they have this great belief and sense of pride in their own position. After all, the North Koreans, and they're all taught this from their early days at school, managed to repel what they regard as the invasion of their country, which occurred in late 1950.
Hmm.
You have to remember that the United Nations authorized a collective force to repel Kim Il-sung's invasion in June 1950. And the authority given to the UN force, led by the Americans, who made up about 95% of that force, was to repel the invasion and restore peace at the border. The problem has been, and it remains a problem because of the effect it had, is that that was done in 3 months. What happened then was, as has happened on subsequent occasions throughout modern history, is that President Truman, his senior generals, General MacArthur, chose to do the very thing which they criticized the North Koreans for doing. They crossed the 38th parallel in the opposite direction. They approached all the way to the Chinese border. That brought in the Chinese army, the People's Liberation Army, and we then had a global war, essentially between China and the United States.
So hence the name of your forthcoming book, Korea, America's First Failed War with China.
Yes. And the disaster and the tragedy is that war then went on for another 2.5 years, and the loss of life was horrendous, more than 2 to 3 million people, most of whom were civilians. North Korea was bombed to obliteration. We tend to think of the bombing of Dresden or the bombing of Tokyo as some of the worst examples of urban area bombing, but North Korea was flattened and napalmed. Napalm made its name in North Korea, not in Vietnam, except that there weren't television journalists to record it in North Korea.
Right.
So there is what many in the West don't appreciate, but the insiders do, a feeling of resentment in North Korea that is deeply established. And one will get nowhere to resolve the impasse until one begins to appreciate the way they look at the problem.
Then surely the secret is that this 1 million of the 25 million, they live a lifestyle that's vastly different from the others. The other 24 million have no access to democracy, they're not free, and the leader of their country is someone who would murder even his own, according to the reports, allegedly murder even his own half-brother for power.
Well, there's no doubt about that. The Gang of Seven that were the pallbearers at his father's funeral in December 2011 have all but disappeared. Some executed, some just disappeared, some demoted. He's quite ruthless in ensuring his own power, and I might say so were his father and grandfather before him.
Yes.
It's a dictatorship.
Yes.
Not every country is a functioning democracy, but the people don't know much better, but they have the beginnings of a market economy. The unofficial market economy, according to the Bank of Korea, which is based in Seoul in South Korea, estimates that the unofficial market economy, this is small businesses, small operations, small mines, accounts for about 30% of the national economy of North Korea. So,
gosh,
look, it's that they believe fervently in their position. They're proud of their position. They believe in the Kim cult. It's definitely a cult, they, you know, it's a bit like Cuba was at one stage. You know, but things will change. Things will change as the market economy takes hold, as more and more have mobile telephones, although the network is confined to the North Korea. As small indications of, I won't say Western culture, but predominantly Chinese culture infiltrate into North Korea, things will slowly change. And Kim Jong-un himself, in a strange way, likes a lot of aspects of Western culture. He likes the sport. He likes the science. He likes the technology.
He was educated in Europe, wasn't he?
He went to a boarding school in Switzerland. Not that, according to such reports as we have, he was a great success there. But yes, he certainly has had a European education.
On Open House, we're speaking with Michael Pembroke, a writer, historian, naturalist, a Supreme Court judge in New South Wales, and the author of a forthcoming book, Korea, America's First Failed War with China, which then sort of begs the question, what's the next war? That's the cheeky proposition posed by the title of your book. To avoid that, which I hope we all agree is a good thing, how should America, how should the West now be responding to the current posturing?
Well, my thoughts on the matter are this. There's no point in maintaining the military mindset which has dominated Washington for the last almost 70 years. There's no point adopting the approach that Kim Jong-un is irrational or a clown, or not being prepared to accord him the respect that any head of state deserves. Diplomacy and foreign relations is not some sort of morality play, in my view. And you've got to be pragmatic. And if you think about the problem and talk to the people involved on both sides, you'll begin to realize, I think, that the biggest problem is that the North Korean nuclear and missile arsenal is a response to the perceived American military threat, not the cause of it. The military threat came first. It's been there. The Eighth Army, for example, arrived in 1950. It's never left. The Russians came and went. The Chinese came and went. What's happened is that the original reasons for the United States establishing military bases in South Korea were associated with the war. But they are now there for additional reasons. They're part of the general American concern to push back against the rise of China. And so the problem has been made worse. The only way to remove the threat is to seriously consider something that Trump mentioned in the course of his campaign, and that is to leave South Korea, to remove the military bases, to save some money, to take the heat out of the situation.
Gosh.
And the related problem, which causes Pyongyang to tremble every spring, is the increasingly hostile war games that take place in the Sea of Japan.
Right.
For several months, around about April, May every year, between the United States and the South Korean armed forces, and Japan was part of it this year too. They get bigger and bigger every year, and it's my hope and my belief that someone like Trump, who is so unpredictable, so mercurial I don't mean that in a flattering way, but that's the way he is, has just got that disruptive policy approach that may break away from the military mindset which has dominated for such a long time and which has led us nowhere but into a worse situation.